Go ahead, you're telling me your first experience with the radio.
That was the first, very, actually planned, an instrument.
I see, okay.
My first experience on the radio, the Glendale Fire Department years ago used to have an awful lot of talent. They had men who had been in show business, firemen. They established the fire department orchestra, and they was on KGLW, a little 24-hour station out here in the valley. It carried all the way to San Diego.
Okay.
And my friend, John Freeman, he played the biggest guitar I've ever seen.
Is that right?
And he was a big fellow to start out with, you know, and he played that guitar, and he taught me quite a little bit on it. And he says, I'll take you and your friend Kenneth McDonald, you sing duets together, and we'll put you on the show. So I said, fine. Well, that was my first radio experience.
Yeah, okay.
My debut on radio.
What year was that now?
Oh, that's back in the 20s.
In the 20s, all
right. Yeah, I was in the 20s.
Yeah.
And, of course, we were, you know, we were going to sing Hand Me Down My Walking Cane.
All right.
When I started out, there's several verses, and I started out, by the fifth verse, I hadn't heard no tenor. We were sitting at a table with a table mic in the studio, and they had an audience back in the glassed-in area.
Yeah.
And so he couldn't see the audience, you know. But I got along about close for the last two verses, and I wondered, what's the matter with Mac? And I looked over, and his mouth was open, but nothing was coming out. He had my fright.
Oh, he did.
So I picked up the next verse.
Yeah.
I missed one verse, but I picked up the next verse, and I carried it on out. The very last line, I heard a little squeak. That was all I got out of him, and that was my debut on radio, say.
That was the end of your duet, right?
And then we organized this group of musicians, got on Bob Schuller's program just after he got through lambasting the City Fathers, and we got radio experience there. Blues Eradicators.
Blues Eradicators.
And then the next thing, there was Malcolm out here from Fort Worth, Texas. And if I talk like a Texan, which fools a lot of people, I got it from the Texans and Oklahomans I worked with for a good many years in what we called hillbilly cowboy music.
Right.
No country western or anything like that. That's before the Sons of the Pioneers, you see.
Okay.
That was in the 20s, too. And we had an old-time fiddler, Sheriff Pop Walter, we called him. He looked like a old-time sheriff. Great big mustache and silver hair like yours, you know. And he was a big fellow, and he could play. I worked with him for 8 years, and he could always coming up with something we'd never heard before.
Is that right?
And he was a wonderful. So we organized. This man took over across the street where I was rooming and boarding at that time. He took over a service station, Richfield Service Station.
Uh-huh.
And he said, I want to know if you know any hillbilly musicians. I said, yeah, I played with a few of them, banjo players and fiddler and all. And he says, well, my two nephews are good singers. And he says, I play harmonica. He plays harmonica, fox and hounds and all that, you know. And he had what you call a whiskey tenor. We all check on it.
Okay.
He wasn't a drinker, but he just a whiskey tenor, we call
right,
it.
Right, right.
And he says, why don't we organize a group? And I'll build a platform out here by the service station under the big tree. It was called the Big Tree Service Station. I'll build a platform out here, and we get together every Wednesday night and just entertain the neighborhood just for the fun of it.
Okay.
So we started doing that, and we would play just for the five playing. People come from the whole neighborhood, and he pitched his tires and his oil and his gasoline and all that. Well, then he was quite a promoter, too. So he said, I got a job for us, no pay, but it's up the First Baptist Church. That's down here on Wilson Street in Glendale. And the preacher down there wasn't able to fill his church, so he started putting on shows. And then he filled the church, and then he locked the doors so the people couldn't get out. And he preached the gospel right down the line. See?
Fire and brimstone.
So we organized a group, and he being from Fort Worth, Texas. Fort Worth is called Cowtown. So he called them the Texas Cowtown Boys, and I was the only coon picker in the whole group. See, they was all from Oklahoma, Texas,
yeah,
Louisiana, places like that in the South. And so they called me the California Okie.
All right.
They gave me the name. Jack Guthrie was one of my close friends. He was a better singer than Woody.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. A far better singer than Woody.
Okay.
Woody got all the credit for it, but Jack was... I got one of his records out in the garage. I wouldn't part with for nothing.
Right.
But anyway, that was the... We organized. And the next time he come up, he says, "Now, I've got a pay job." But Bruce was a funny guy. He could go to church and pray like the devil, but then he could cheat the pants off of you with come to money, see? But he got the opening, grand opening of the Union Public Market there on South Bryant here in Glendale, which later became McMahon's furniture store and still is.
Okay.
They opened three nights, 3 days of entertainment. So we had that was the first pay job. And then we got on to KFED, we got on KMPC, and you didn't make a lot of money in those days, you know, but you made a few dollars. And then the Depression come along, and every buck you got, every nickel you got, was worth something.
Sure, right.
So then from that part, of course, I organized bands, too. We played old-time dances.
Mm-hmm.
You remember the Johnson Club?
No.
So many people don't remember the old age Thompson Club.
Uh-huh.
Well, that was the first, actually, I think that was the first gathering of senior citizens.
Oh, yeah.
And it was right across from the post office down here on Broadway. There was a little dance hall,
uh-huh,
one-story building. And every Saturday night, they had the old Thompson Club members. Dr. Thompson wanted the government to give them $200 a month, senior citizens, that they would have to spend. They could not put it in the bank or save it. They'd have to spend it, keep the money circulating, you see.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, this is at the beginning of the Depression. And so we played old-time dances there at the Moose Club in Glendale on Wednesday nights, old-time dances. And we entertained our old Calabasas out here, which don't even look like it used to be, but old Calabasas is still there with a hangman's tree.
Okay.
We played there every Saturday night for a long, long time. It took that time, without the freeway, it took you 2 hours to get to Calabasas.
Is that right?
From here. Now you can get up there in 45 minutes.
Sure, right.
But we played up there every Saturday night. We played in the cafe first, entertaining in the cafe. An old couple had owned the cafe. They were East Indian,
uh-huh,
you know. And next door was a improvised, it had been a store, with accordion-type doors, and they made a dance hall out of it.
Okay.
And we had, every Saturday night, we had the best fights you ever saw in your life, too. Because they had a group called the Pugilists, Young Pugilists from Van Nuys, and Hearst had a big ranch up there.
Okay.
And his cowboys. And they come down to dance, and the pugilists come from Van Nuys, and if they just bumped an elbow, so help me, the fight started, see.
Okay.
Every Saturday night we had very good fights along with our dances.
Well,
that was the starting of entertaining.
All right.
I first started to learn on a ukulele.
Uh-huh.
And then my mother was a concert pianist and a concert guitarist, but she passed away when I was only 7 years old.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
Then a real musician, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But I still got the ukulele sitting over there.
That there
came from Hawaii, my brother-in-law, back one time. But I started on the ukulele, and I wanted to play the guitar. Of course, then I took over the guitar. And I used the guitar in my work for years, you know, on singing calls. If I didn't have an instrumental for it, I had a guitar. I was one to jump ahead of the boys that
right.
don't play guitar. See,
right. Yeah.
And had a yoke
microphone.
With a microphone
yeah.
and the guitar hooked up to the amplifier, you know. And that's why my wife says, "I got round shoulders." Shooting into the
oh yeah, talking into the mic, yeah.
mouth into that mic, you know.
Uh-huh.
But she says, "Boy, when I met you, you had the straightest back I ever saw," you know. And
yeah. Now I wanted to ask you, Jonesy, you're talking about old time dances. What would be a typical? What do you how do you describe old-time dances?
How do I identify them?
No, how do you describe them now? I mean, were they like visiting couple dances or?
Oh, yes.
They were,
okay. Well, old-time dances also have your square dancing.
Yeah.
They have your Virginia Reels.
Okay.
And they have dances like I just mentioned a little while ago.
Yeah, okay.
I don't know if you remember them or not, but I remember some of the numbers we played. One was a Princess Glide.
No, never.
Princess Glide and the Oxford Minuet.
Oxford Minuet, okay.
We played that one. I could go through a whole bunch of them if I say you take them. Oh, old time dances.
Yeah, how about Varsuviana?
Yeah, Varsuviana. And then you had your two steps, you had your waltzes.
Okay.
And all every type of music. I just carried on with records the same thing. Saturday night for Jehovah's Witnesses in Beverly Hills,
mm-hmm.
once a year, and this is the 25th year. And they took me over and they brought me home, and I used records. Now, when you go on a one-night stand, you don't just stick to one certain type of record. You've got to have a lot of records.
Right.
They'll come up, they'll ask for Latin, the tango, the rumba, things like that. They'll come up and ask, you know, the breaks.
Yeah.
You teach them about for a half hour, and then you take a break. And then on the break, they like to get out and dance other dances.
Okay.
So they put on a twist, and there for a little while, and do all the fun dances. The Birdie Song, the Hokey Pokey.
Okay.
And I also use different dances that I believe that if you're going to teach them circle dances, like Patty Cake Polka, Jiffy Mixer, and All-American Promenade,
mm-hmm.
which has a whirl away with a half sachet.
Right, right.
Well, if you do the bingo,
yeah,
you've done that one.
Yeah, bingo.
All right, Blazer Roll Away with a half sachet.
Yeah.
That teaches before you teach them the
okay.
All-American Promenade, see?
Right.
And that's the way I work it out, but I give them everything. So there was a little lull there. I wasn't getting them out on the floor. It's a tennis court, and I wasn't getting them out on tennis court. So I just reached over and took a record of the 45 of the Bee Gees. I put that tennis court floor. He'd been going through the funny motions they used to do in the rock and roll. And then I put on another one. I forget what it was right after that, and they all come out again. I had given them so many square dances. I'd give them the Virginia Reel. I teach only half of it first, the first half, and then I teach the real part, the
yeah.
second, later on.
See? I do the same thing.
Yeah. All fun. Everything's
yeah.
fun.
Yeah.
Well, I sent a caller in my place one time, and I was amazed. Ask him, do you call the Virginia Reel?
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of these fellows say they call for one-night stands. I don't know what they use. So
right,
I think they must try to conduct it like a class.
Yeah.
And it's
yeah.
not a class. You know
right.
that.
Sure. Yeah.
But that was the starting of my introduction into music, you know, see. And then when I got the angel sitting on my shoulder, we used to have, remember, the Packard Bell and a Howard radio, phonograph, and recorder.
Okay.
And you recorded your own record.
I see.
Well, I had a bee in my bonnet. I figured I could sell it. And I've always said, it's a funny thing, but I always said that if you have a group in the park and you get up there with a bottle of horse manure and you can sell it, if you think you can sell it, you'll sell it, see?
Yeah, right.
Well, I had the idea in my mind that I could do singing call, the old time dance at Hot Time in the Old Town Tonight.
Yeah.
So I recorded it here with a guitar
right.
on a little acetate, and I took it out to sell it. Well, the angel come in here, sit on my shoulder, because at that time I was calling, Les Coetzer and I both was calling square dances at Poot Gibson's old painted post.
All right.
And the promoter had taken it over, who was a showman. He'd bought it, and he's the one who put Les on the road and called him the world champion square dance caller.
Yeah.
And Les believed it.
Yeah, right.
He, along with another caller, Bill Moody, they were the world champions.
Okay.
Anyway, I got this idea in my head, and I said, I'm going to sell it. So I took the pages, yellow pages, and I wrote down all the recording companies over in Hollywood. And one that I hadn't seen before was C.P. McGregor. And McGregor, you know, was high in a shrine.
Yeah.
He got the highest potentate, he got two more steps higher before he passed away. And I went over, cold as a frog. I didn't know anyone. But that was the closest one to, from down where we live in South Glendale, over there, right over Harperian, and that was the closest one. So I went there first. But the angel guided me there. Because what happened, you wouldn't believe this, what happened was, I went in, and the lady receptionist there said, can I do something for you? And I said, yes. I said, I'd like to talk to somebody in regards to recording square dances. Oh, I said, we're recording a caller now, and I don't think they'd be interested. I said, do you mind telling me what your caller's name is? She said, Les Gulcher. The lady, the only difference between Les and me, he can do paddock calls, but he can't sing, period.
Right.
And I said, I can sing. And so she says, well, I still don't think they'd be interested. And I said, okay, I'm going to Hollywood. I'm going over to Capitol. I'm going to Columbia and Victor, MGM, you name it. Somebody's going to make a lot of money. Well, you tell anybody working for a Scotsman that, and they get interested, you see. So she says, sit down, I'll call Art. And here's where the angel comes in, see.
Okay.
The man come in the door, and he opened the door and come in. And I jumped up and started giving him a big long spiel, you know. And he says, my name's Jones. I said, so is mine. I said, I'm looking for somebody by the name of Art. Oh, he says, give him time, he'll be out directly. But the door opened, and the man stepped in, and I says, what in the Sam Hill are you doing here? Well, he says, John D. says, I'm the chief sound engineer here in McGregor for 12 years. He danced he and his wife Marie danced every night at the old painted post. I never asked him where he worked.
Sure.
But the angel says, go there first. He says, what you got in mind? I said, well, I understand you're recording Les. Yeah. I said, well, you know, Les can't sing. He says, I'm trying to teach him. So he said, what you got in mind?
Good luck.
So I told him, I said, here's the last state of maid and hot time in the old town night singing calls. And he says, you come back in the back studio and forget Local 47 for a little while. Bring you got your guitar and your car. Yeah, I said, go get it. We'll go back to the main studio in the back and make a good recording for Mr. McGregor. As a result of that, I was at McGregor Records almost 16 years.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, the angel says go there first.
Yeah.
Later on, went to Capitol, but McGregor says, singing calls for us, Capitol, paddock calls, no singing calls.
Okay.
And we did one for Bob Wills. He come out here, and that was a funny one, too, because Bob Wills don't know how to call a square dance.
Yeah.
He can say, ha-ha, swing your partner, but that's about it.
Yeah.
But he come out here, and he wanted to record a square dance caller, and I got the job. And his manager says, you know, your name won't be on the record.
Uh-huh.
The only name on that record says Bob Wills.
Right.
Takes the Playboy. I said, as long as I get paid, I don't care, see. Well, when it was released, the station out in Van Nuys, our square dancer in the valley told me about it. This jockey says, oh, new release of Bob Wills. He called him square dance. And so I said, started spinning. My voice comes on. The phone starts ringing. People told me. He says, this isn't Bob Wills. That's Jonesy. We know his voice. And he said, the guy said, well, how's that? Right over the mic. He says, how's I supposed to know his name not on there?
Right.
Bob Wills wouldn't let nobody else's name be on that record, see?
Sure.
But everybody knew my voice. That was a funny part about it.
That's funny.
And we got in from there. That ballooned in from the recording end of it. That number four album took me there over the whole United States Florence and I, and most of three-fourths of Canada.
Yeah.
And took me further into further reporting. It also went international, clear to Europe. They got our records. They had to go through the black market in London. I talked to people in London how to square dance, you know.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I was one of them.
Good.
I think one of the other callers was over there and taught them a lot. But I taught them by correspondence.
Uh-huh.
And when they took us back to get the milestone award, we were waiting in line to go in the banquet hall. And two Englishmen come up to me.
Uh-huh.
And they said, Jonesy, if it hadn't been for you, we would not be square dancers. If it hadn't been for you, we would not have been square dance callers. And we want to tell you something. We don't say pass through anymore, or half anymore. We say pass through and half. I gave the biggest laugh out of that.
Yeah,
you know?
Sure.
And Herb Gregerson was on, he died shortly after that.
Yeah,
he was given the milestone at that night, but he was paralyzed some way, shape, or form. Had a stroke.
Oh, the same time you were.
Herb was a real nice person.
Yes, I knew Herb.
A nice person.
Yeah.
He put out the Blue Bonnet, number one, two, and three, and so forth. And one of the things, though, he'd come out here, and he would teach the cowboy do-si-do. Which Shaw later called Old Paso.
Right.
Boy, that burned me when he did that. Lloyd Shaw, that's one of them. I love Lloyd Shaw. But I never went to his institutes or anything, but I met him when he came out here, a real gentleman if I ever met one, and a real terrific man.
Yeah.
And I got my picture taken with him on the stand down in Santa Monica.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of people don't know that, but I got my picture taken with him right alongside me.
Yeah, was that the time?
Lloyd Shaw was, you might say, responsible, you know, by taking his dancers in the 30s all over the country. He was crippled, though. He couldn't dance himself, you see.
No,
but he
I
could
know.
Teach.
Yeah.
He was a good instructor. But that also went into motion pictures.
Yeah.
As a square dance caller.
Yeah.
Then I was classified as carry an A card as an actor, you say. You get privileges when you're an actor. You get a dressing room all your own. You don't have to go in the wardrobe and change clothes. Well, there's a lot of things that are behind me now. You know.
Sure.
But I call for all the clubs here and strictly around this area, the whole area here, and I called for fairs and squares Santa Barbara, where you just come from many, many times up there for fairs and squares.
Yeah.
Bruce had him. He was a regular caller. There's so many things that happened, you know, just from being a square dance caller. They wanted a square dance caller in a motion picture. I belong to the guild, so I would get the call, you know, through an agent, I guess.
Yeah.
So I worked in several, good many pictures.
Yeah.
And one picture we was working in, and he was the most awful director I ever heard in my life. Swear that everybody, and O'Brien was the actor. He was taking the place. They had to reshoot parts of the film over.
Yeah.
With what was his first name, O'Brien? trying to think of it now, I can't think of it. But the other actor had been called with a 10 to Washington, the Hollywood 10, that they suspicioned him being communist.
Yeah.
And so they had to redo his part all over, and O'Brien had to take it.
Yeah, wasn't it Pat O'Brien?
Pat O'Brien.
Right.
Yeah. Give us 5 minutes to get it.
You got it.
He was in the dressing room, and he was the meanest director I ever worked under. He was sitting up there on the boom, you know, and he hollered, swearing at him, get out of there, you so-and-so-and-so-and-so. Get down here on the set. And if he'd done that to me, I'd be in a fight right now, you know. But he come down laughing, see. So he did his part. Filling in for this other actor. And then I did my part, and we did it just one, two, three, just like that. And arms around each other, shoulders walked out. We showed the old guy, didn't we? Now, I got into that. traveled all over the United States by invitation only.
Yeah.
Was a back here in Kansas City. They asked me the first time I ever went east of California. They asked me to be the guest caller at the municipal in the municipal auditorium. I'll get that out.
Yeah.
3 nights and 3 days, and it's the only thing that come out in the black of the whole centennial celebration. The second year, they asked me to go call Ricky Holland. And Ricky was kind of...
funny guy.
Yeah, he was on a little, not as bad as Les was. Les, you know, Les was a renegade.
Yeah.
And anything that burned me up, this man has got, took over the American squares.
Yeah.
He published, you read it probably, the complaints that Les Culture had.
Yeah.
He published that. I quit taking the magazine just like that. I won't take a magazine that will publish a running down Lloyd Shaw, running down the Colors Association, running down the Ray Shaw, Lloyd's brother.
Right.
Ray Shaw is greater than, out here, greater than Lloyd, you know. But to publish a man running down everybody but himself, and he was the one to blame for everything.
Yeah.
He said the Callers Association was organized to keep him out. The Callers Association were taking him in if he had said, "I don't drink on the job." He said, "If I want to drink on the job, that's my business." And him, when he used to drink on the job, and. That's kind of, see, that's why he wrecked himself when he called to the clubs out here.
Yeah.
He was in the early days when there was nothing out there in the valley except country.
Yeah.
And he was supposed to call for a club out there. They were going to give him $15, which was at that time was the minimum, see? And 25 was the maximum. And he was going to call for them, and he didn't show up.
Uh-huh.
I got a call on the phone and says, our caller, Les Gosher, didn't show up. Can you come out and call for us, see? And it's clear out to Northridge. And I filled in for him. Because somebody else gave him $5 more, and he took it and never let those people know.
Yeah.
Well, Les created his own problems, you see.
Yeah.
But that's the way it started. I got started on the recording. That went to Capitol. MGM was interested with Bob Wills and the Master Tone. They just put it in the... I guess they got in the other room. The Hall of Fame callers.
Oh, yes.
The picture you're going to put in a book. I was going to mention that. I forgot now where I was at about that time, so you'll have to retape that part.
No, that's no problem.
My mind slipped.
Yeah.
Two of the old people danced out there, and the old dances and everything, the little town of Hemet. They decided they were going to have a kind of a country fair situation, and they says, we'll give $100 to the best square dance group to come out here and to our little town and have a contest. Uncle Carl Miles, you're acquainted with him.
Yeah.
He was the most... that's put a dignified gentleman I think I ever ran into in my whole life. He was really Uncle Carl Miles was great. Well, he had a group that danced, and they were almost like professionals. They would every thumb and finger come in like the Boston Tea Cup Bowl, you know.
Okay.
And they said, we're going to get that $100. Les Gosher with his group. He says, we're going to get it. Well, they were so far ahead of the little dancers, square dancers there in the little town of Hemet. He picked me up and took me over there. My equipment, see. I don't want to drive at night back through that traffic over there.
Right.
So, I said, well, I didn't know how I was going to get home because he had to leave her. Then the lady said, well, one of my daughters is going to take you home. I she was going to go the route of the Coldwater Canyon, which is, boy, if you've ever been on that.
Yeah.
First time I was ever on it when I last year. No, it's a curvy deal. Scary, and at night, particularly if you go down there. So I told her, young girl, I said, let's go by way of Surface Street. Go down here and get on Melrose Avenue and go all the way down to Vermont, and then up Vermont, Los Feliz, and on behind to Gundale. Well, we'd had a big potluck dinner at 6 o'clock, and then they danced from 8 to 11, and I didn't feel bad at all. But on the way down Melrose, about halfway from there, Beverly Hills to Gundale, we were riding along, and all of a sudden, you know how a hiccup is. Well, this is different. This is two or three real heavy, like a hiccup. See? Just boom, 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 like that. And then I felt something come right up into my chest like that.
Hmm.
And it cut off my breath for a second, see? And so then I held my stomach. Sitting in the position in that car, it was a little car, and you're almost laying halfway back. And I said, gee, what to Sam Hill is happening, you know? I've heard of people with these hernias, I hear you, or whatever they call hernias. And I wondered if that's what it was, you know, see? So then it went away, and I said to her, I'm not going to do any talking for a little bit, you know. I said, relax here. And so it didn't happen again. And I had for 10 days a real heavy soreness right from here, clear across my rib cage, which I was putting with this arthritis, because this arthritis does that, so you get the muscle again. And so I had that all there, and it, just before that happened, it got real, real sore. Real sore. And then that happened like that, and it frightened her too. And then I said, boy, what the Sam Hill going on? And woke up the next morning, all this soreness was gone.
Have you had?
I haven't put it together, and I went to my doctor yesterday and told him about it. He said, well, he says, if you have a hiatic, and he says, if you have that type of hernia, if it happens again, then we'll take x-rays and find out if that's what it is. Well, so far it hasn't happened. And all that soreness left. Now, isn't that strange?
That's strange.
And I've been blaming that on
sure.
Arthritis.
Yeah, right.
Boy, it got just before then, it got to, it must have been the position I was in beginning that.
Probably,
But I don't know what this was. It's like a big boom, you know. It scared me.
Right. So you take your guitar to these things, and off you go, and you take your records too, now?
I don't take the guitar anymore.
You don't, okay.
Well, I got a Martin, you know, ancient history.
Yeah.
Right now it's appraised at $1,500.
Is that right?
I paid $75.
Okay.
It was brand new.
Yeah.
They'd given it to a preacher in Burbank. His congregation gave it to him, and I don't know why he didn't want it, but he took it down to Karate Music Company and traded it on something else, and I went in and shortly afterward, and here's a guitar up there, says Martin Guitar, $75. And I got another one, and I sold it a couple of years ago for $800, and it was a triple O 21, but it was scratched up a lot, on my belt buckle and all that.
Yeah.
This one here, though, has always been a little high on the fingerboard. And there's a gentleman down here in Glendale worked for Gibson guitar people in Chicago for 25 years and did a lot of repair work through the music companies here.
Yeah.
And I took it down to him and I asked him, is there any way that you can lower those strings just a little bit so that it won't be so high on the fingerboard? It's no problem. He lowered them all right, but it messed up the first three frets from the neck up. And don't have it. So now I took it out to Larry Larson Music Company. He he repairs and stuff like that. And he played it, and he said, I don't see anything wrong with it. Well, he played just a melody on it, see?
Yeah.
But if you can go to chord,
right,
then to the first three frets, all you get on the E and A of the bass strings and the G string, all you get is like that, see?
Yeah.
And so I don't know what I'm going to do now. Look up a guitar man, a guitar maker, and see if he can correct your problem. Because if,
yeah,
you send it, or if you send it all the way back to Pennsylvania, to Martin, you got to ship it, and you don't know what they're going to sock you for that, you know, see? So when I called them once before, they recommended some place in L.A. But I won't go down to L.A. I don't like Los Angeles. I was born there. The radio with the Texas Cowtown Boys, Jack Guthrie, Woody Guthrie's cousin, he was on the show, and he was the wildest Indian I ever saw in my life. I never saw a man like him. If the radio, in the Depression, the government organized a country music group for country musicians on the WPA. It saved this man's life, because I just got through getting rid of an incurable disease, raw milk fever.
Okay.
No cure for it. But the doctor I had was a chest expert, tubercular chest expert. She said, go to bed and stay there until I tell you to get up. 3.5 months later, she said, you can get up now, your temperature's down and wrong. But she had to watch it. And you could come back if you again. So they got that music project going. They were going to put me in county commissary at $28 a month and dishing out vegetables. And so I run into the old-time fiddler where he worked with for so many years. He says, John D., says, go down and see Bruce. He's one. He and I organized that Texas Countdown Voices. He's one of the heads on this new project. He'll put you on. I went down there and they put me on for $84 a month, and then I got to be, had a group of my own, and I got $94 a month. And then I'm going to pick up on the sideline. My wife got along pretty, and I got along pretty good during the Depression.
Sure.
But for a whole year before they closed it down, and saved this man's life.
Okay. Yeah. And did you ever do any television work? Television?
I did. I've got it here someplace. I think when television was brand new,
yeah,
I called for a square dance group. They had to wear certain colors. You couldn't wear in certain colors. You could wear.
Right.
I called for a group on television. I don't know whatever become of that. Yeah.
Well, it's probably lost, too, you know. They didn't save those things in those days. Mm-hmm. The kinescopes, they call them. Yeah, I had the same thing happen when I was on the Arthur Godfrey show back in New York City. And we were never able to find a copy of it, you know. But... Well, you've had quite an experience all your life there, John.
Oh, yeah.
Your little angel's still taking care of you.
That angel sits there all the time.
Right.
I lost my wife 13 years ago, July.
Okay.
Suddenly. What's this?
The mailman, I think.
Well, I've done an awful lot on television. Mostly motion pictures.
Yeah.
I worked in about a dozen motion pictures.
Okay.
Andy Devine, worked with Andy Devine, one called Slaughter Trail. It was a cowboy Indian thing, you know, the Union Army. And he was a big sergeant. I had him in my group, you know. I had a group of... Bob had him for a while. Arnie had him for a while. And then I fell heir to them. And they were all motion picture people.
I see.
real funny thing happened one night. The first time I called for that group, I hadn't danced with you. Glendale said they got a horn up there. They were calling dances up there, had an orchestra and everything, getting an orchestra behind me. And Andy Devine come in. The floor was never made for square dancers. And unfortunately, it was every first and third Saturday. On the second Saturday, they had a dog show. And they had to redo the whole floor. And it was slick as glass. Oh, we walked in and we said, boy, we won't have any more square dancers here. But you know, they stuck it out. And the sound was terrible there, terrible sound. They've corrected that since then after a lot of complaining. But Andy Devine and another radio personality was a commentator. They come in, just as I was calling that dance I made up called Indian Style. I give it to the kids. They have a ball with it. Now go in, all the kids are squared up, sitting down on the floor, and they're squared. And I said, greeting, how? So anyway, he walked in, and he was going to have a New Year's party. And so he hired me to do the New Year's party way over here in the area called Hidden Valley. It's way down the other side of Mahone, drive down the canyon. There were two brothers, twin brothers, had a great big estate down there. And he had a recreation room I could put about eight sets in. It was a huge recreation room. Well, this is New Year's Eve. Unknowns to me, you see. I knew Andy was a famous motion picture man. But I didn't know that this was going to take in others. We got ready to square up, and here's the gentleman come in and soup and fish. And I looked at him, I said, Ronald Coleman is a beginner.
Yeah.
Ronald Coleman, he'd been to a New Year's party and come over to me. And just by that time, Andy says, how, Jonesy? Scalp him, Jonesy. You know, tomahawk, Jonesy. That's what they were doing when he come into the Civic Auditorium. Everybody was saying, oh, no. And so, he was the smoothest dancer you ever saw in your life.
Yeah.
He'd learned from one of our instructors out here, and they taught him styling, like Carl Miles, the Carl Miles, everything was styling, you know.
Yeah.
Maxheimer, everything was styling. And so he got in number three position. I said, this guy don't know nothing in my mind, you know what I'm saying. Well, I started calling him, boy, was he smooth. He was so smooth. He was so smooth that they'd purposely try to follow him up.
Mm-hmm.
And a real nice guy to talk to, awful nice fellow to talk to. But Andy Devine was in that picture, Slaughter Trail, and then there was this studio dance man that was also, everything had to be perfected, you know. And he was shooting a picture, we had to rehearse out in the dirt, outside the stage. And it was supposed to be clodhoppers, you know, pioneers, clodhoppers, cowboys. And he says to me, he was Russian background, called me Chonesy.
Yeah.
Yeah, Chonesy, I want you to know something. These people are not dancing like they're supposed to be dancing. But imagine what a guy's out in the dirt. And they're not dancing like they should be dancing. They should be dancing smooth and graceful. I had to explain to him, I says, these dancers are cowboys, clodhoppers, and all. I said, they're not supposed to be graceful.
Yeah.
They're supposed to be just the opposite. And so I convinced him, see, because he wanted them to be like our regular dancers, you know.
Like a ballet dancer.
Smooth and silk.
Yeah.
No, there's a lot of things happened in square dancing. It's been good to me.
So you were with your wife before you were married. At that time, you must have been, what, entertaining but not square dancing? Or?
Yeah, I was.
Yeah.
In fact, the way I got to be a caller, I'll have to tell you this because I almost forgot it. See, I used to hire a caller. And he had this before PA systems. And he used a 6-inch megaphone.
Right.
Ray Little John was his name. A beautiful voice. I went a half block down the street one night from the Moose Hall, which was upstairs, and I could hear him calling a half block down the street. And he was the master of ceremonies of the entire floor. We gave him $3 a night.
Yeah.
That was his wages, $3 a night. He told us what to play. And so we would play, like I was mentioning, Princess Line, different old dances like that we played. And these old people used to dance all those old dances. The three-step, I never learned it. To this day, I never learned the three-step. The woman I was trying to teach me, Dorothy Vernon, her young son was a movie star. And she was short and fat, and she wore a steel corset. I was trying to get a hold of something, trying to make that turn and the dip. But I didn't know how to square dance. I wasn't a square dancer. I'm a musician.
Yeah.
And he come to me one night, Ray says, gee, he says, I've been put on swing shift. 2 weeks out of the month, so I won't be available those 2 weeks if you have any work in the council club particularly. I said, priest. There's only one other caller. There's only two callers in Glendale at that time. The other one is Mac McCracken, and he had a temper. And I wouldn't hire him because he bawled. I hired him once, and he bawled people out for making a mistake, you know. And so I wouldn't hire him. So I said to Florence, now, what does Sam Hill am I going to do now? Well, she looked me square in the eye. Says, you sit down here and memorize verse and verse and verse of ballads and all those railroad songs and cowboy songs and all that. Why don't you ask Ray if you have 4 or 5 of those simple little calls? You call the same thing every weekend, see? And so I talked to him about it. I says, well, when you're available, I hire you. But can you possibly give me some things to carry on? You only needed 1 or 2, you know. Because that's all we had in those days.
Right.
5 was great. You knew 5 of them. But he said, yeah, sure. So he gave me Bird in a Cage, Split the Ring, Forward 3 and 3 Fall Back, at
yeah.
On Call.
Yeah.
And one other one. And so I didn't know how to dance. I didn't know a thing about dancing. So I said, well, put yourself into it. You have the rhythm, you got a voice. And then I got a real fortunate thing. The angel come in and sit on my shoulder. Down on Main Street in L.A., I went into a second-hand shop and we would not have found a Masco amplifier. The Navy, you know, had the Masco.
Okay.
They were real tinny on board ship. But I got the Masco amplifier, 10-watt, and a speaker, and a crystal microphone. I set that up in front of the band, and I saw these dances. I figured out, you know, you put 2 and 2. It takes so many beats. Circle 4, so many circle 6. So that's the way I figured it all out, see. I just called. I never lost him. You know, you were busy playing, you don't see what's going on.
Sure.
Well, I use this little amplifier. And people come up and say, hey, we can hear you, everything you say, clear in the back of the hall. And we like what you're doing. We like it real well. I said, well, that's fine. And I said, I enjoy your compliments and all. I said, I'm new at this sort of thing. So then, every Saturday night, here we come with either a lady or a gentleman, even with a match cover, written down on, this is what we used to dance this one back home. And would you look it over and call it next time? First thing you know, I had 20 of them. Boy, I thought, hey, oh, Jones has really got some
you're the world champion. Right?
Some of them were as short as book, and I didn't run up on them.
Yeah.
And so that's the funniest thing happened after that was out in the valley out there, and I was calling the dance, and through the door come four girls, four women, in black skirts, taffeta skirts, white blouses, the men in Western gear, boots and all, with long hairs, beards and mustaches, four men, and I said to my fiddler, the guy at the House of David just walked in. And he said, well, he would turn out to be the first organized square dance club in this area. Sherman Saunders was the caller, and they danced only in motion pictures. They didn't dance, he didn't call, only in motion pictures. He never called in public. Bob didn't know him. Bob didn't know him at all. For years we had explained who he was. He called, if you asked for a dance in the 12th century, he could get it. Believe it. He was a wonderful type. Well, he called all evening, 6-8 times. All evening.
Right.
Yeah, that's pretty hard to do, you know, we did real fine.
Yeah.
All evening. And they usually had just a fiddle and a guitar player, accordion, that's all. But anyway, the lady come to me, and it's in that picture just come out. At the end of the dance, she come up, she says, they were real square dancers. Boy, they could dance a storm, you know. In fact, when Faye Stern was swinging, her skirt went way out like that, and she was wearing ballet shorts, and my fiddler stopped right like that.
Yeah.
And he saw his wife looking at him, and he started playing. But you know, that was, she come up to me after the dance was over and says, we've been hearing about you. Been hearing about you. We come to see how good you are. Because you're pretty good. But she says, you got a lot to learn. She says, I'm going to ask you a question. What size hat do you wear? I said, size 7. She says, you keep your hat size 7 the rest of your life, and someday you're going to be an internationally known square dance caller. That's when I was just a pup caller, see? And so another time I was playing the American Legion Hall out in Burbank. And who was standing up against the door with a big tall guy with a black hat cocked on the side of his head? Ray Shaw. He'd heard about me. He was dying to know who he was at the time, but he'd heard about me, see? I had a band, we were playing the music. And so anyway, her prediction came true. See, the records went around different parts of the world. I got letters from Peru, and the Standard Oil Company, and boy, he wrote, says, my wife is up visiting up there in your area, and she says that we're not doing the twirl correctly. She said, we learned to square dance through your number 4 album. Somebody was a guest from the States, left it in their guest room, and he said he picked it up. He wrote, and he said, I picked it up, and I looked at it, and I said, this is nice, easy to do. So he got 3 more couples, and they learned to square dance on that set. And this happened all over different places, London and all, and that's her prediction.
Yeah.
Came true, you see.
That's great.
But without the angel,
I'm set
on the angel guides you through your life.
Right. Well, I think I better ease on down the road, as they say, Jonesy. I certainly enjoyed this conversation with you.
Well, it's a pleasure to meet you.
And
I never thought I'd ever meet either Al Brundage or Bob Brundage.
Well, there you go.
And reading the boxer for year and year.
Right. Well, again, thanks very much for taking the time and
enjoy
well,
it.
We'll call this a day.
I'm a talker. I like to talk.
Well, that's all. I never met a caller that didn't. So we'll hope to see you again real soon, Jonesy.